morning, Cascadia. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Today is Monday, October 19th, 2009. And this is Air Cascadia, long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
Medical marijuana gets a break, but what does this mean for potential commercial hemp producers?
John Kitzhaber and Bill Bradbury are the face of the race for the governor's seat.
And there are ominous rumblings from Coos Bay. Is that the sound of the Port Commission rolling over?
Or bending over. Portland area weather today, showers late this morning, cloudy, high near 61. Tonight, patchy fog, mostly cloudy with a low around 48. Tomorrow, a foggy morning and a partly sunny afternoon with a high near 62.
And first we go to regional news from around Cascadia. Well, it's been an interesting few days in Coos Bay. The port has shown a sudden interest in pressuring FERC, or the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, to put the Jordan Cove Energy Pacific Connector project on their agenda. Anti-LNG activist Jody McCaffrey is back today to consider the question of the Jordan Cove Pacific Connector environmental impact statement and other LNG industry irritants. Good morning, Jody. Thanks for being with us today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, as you point out in an email, it has been an interesting few days as the port plays their hand. What is going on down there in Coos Bay with the LNG project?
Well, the FERC did not have Jordan Cove on their October agenda, and that just kind of raised a little bit of issues with our port. Suddenly, they decided they better get involved and actually recently sent a motion to be a intervener on the project. This is like 2 years after the deadline, and also asked that FERC put this on the agenda for November, so the Jordan Cove Pacific Connector project.
So essentially we've got similarities here between the Jordan Cove proposal and Bradwood Landing in that the backers of LNG, the companies involved, seem to assume that laws are going to be changed to make way for their projects to go ahead, regardless of public opinion and local opposition. How do people feel about the Jordan Cove proposal right now?
Well, this proposal with this pipeline is going to impact, you know, hundreds of landowners. I mean, you got the risk of eminent domain. There's over 3,000 acres of forest and woodland that are going to be impacted, 623 acres of agricultural lands. There's 123 streams or water bodies that are known fish-bearing streams that we know will be impacted. I mean, this, and that doesn't include all the residents and visitors that are going to be in an impact hazardous burn zone. And why are we doing this? So we can import more foreign fossil fuels, I mean, that we don't want or need? I mean, it doesn't even make sense. But these energy companies have a lot of money, and I think what they've done is come into these small communities and, you know, started giving money to desperate, you know, agencies that need it.
Or at least dangling money in front of their eyes. Whether or not funds actually would be forthcoming is an open question.
Well, and I think they've had such an easy time in these little rural communities that we have, like up in Astoria and down here, because we're so desperate for jobs. And they think they could just do this all the way to the federal government. But, you know, you can't buy off everybody. I'm sorry. You have to follow the rules. And what they have done is not follow the rules. They've tried to just trample over them. And at some point, it's going to catch up with them because we're not going to just let them do this to us without putting up a fight. And not only that, but fighting for what we should be doing. We can develop and have community jobs, but we don't have to destroy everything to do it.
And then they are at some point, of course, going to run up against the environmental impact statement. Jody, thank you so much for that. My guest has been Jody McCaffrey in Coos Bay, the main, I would say, LNG activist down on Oregon's southern coast. Thanks so much, Jody.
Thank you.
You didn't really believe the hype about marine sanctuaries now, did you? What exactly would these sanctuaries be sanctuaries for, considering that we now have year-round dead zones that are expanding at an alarming rate? The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration itself says that it has no plans to initiate an assessment of potential marine sanctuaries anytime soon. According to Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, any such decision will be part of a comprehensive review of our nation's marine waters, an interagency process expected to take several years.
Elder discrimination can be good for the good old bottom line. Just ask Horst Grimm, Portland's last downtown furrier. Grimm has got himself a restraining order on the basis of his age by accusing animal rights protesters abusing him because he is elderly. The 75-year-old Grimm owns Nicholas Unger Furs at Southwest Yamhill Street and 12th Avenue, where daily vigils have been held since last January. Despite a professed no-compromise ethic, activists say all they want is to open a discussion with the Grim Reaper. I say, let's bring the animals in and see what their experience has been like. Age is definitely not an issue. They don't live long enough.
In these strange days, the Earth's dominant predator seems to have the rest of the species on the ropes. In Washington State, ranchers are wetting their plaid flannel panties over gray wolves. So here's the proposed solution. Ranchers would get twice the value of their animals for a wolf kill on a grazing site of at least 100 acres. They would get full value on smaller acres or on smaller sites. It's worth the price if it puts an end to the decimation of newly restored gray wolf populations.
Well, John Kitzhaber and Bill Bradbury are the front runners in Oregon's gubernatorial race. Yesterday, in a joint appearance at the party's summit conference, Bradbury promised to beef up funding for Oregon schools. Kitzhaber said he would offer voters proposals to boost achievement among Oregon students, not just simplistic campaign slogans. The back and forth focused on education and school funding. Safe territory, since it's an issue no one would be dumb enough to argue against. The big issues, like the truth, are still out there. The environment and the employment scene, both of which are in deep trouble. Bradbury came out slightly to the left of the former gov, but in the end, Kitzhaber got a few more votes than Bradbury in Sunday's straw poll.
At this point, first-time home buyers have until December 1st to take advantage of the $8,000 federal tax credit incentive. It's part of a stimulus package tax break being pushed as a significant prop for the still-tottering economy. Legislators want to extend the deal as a prop for their still-tottering seats. The latest Senate proposal would extend the credit beyond first-time homebuyers, and that would cost more. The Obama administration says there's not going to be a second stimulus package after last February's $787 billion booster. Much of that one hasn't been disbursed yet, and the longer it sits in the vault, the more of it will inevitably be whittled away by committee. The homebuyers' credit and unemployment benefits are promoted as a fast track back to a healthy economy. But the ugly truth is that people need jobs. That's the real bottom line.
Mice, Liam. It's mice going at the rest of the money. It's just sitting there. It's not doing anything, as we've all noticed.
Yeah.
Attorney General Eric Holder has got some cheery news for medical marijuana patients. The Obama administration will not seek to arrest you or your suppliers as long as everyone obeys state laws. The new policy guidelines land on federal prosecutors' desks today. Justice Department officials say it is not a good use of their time to arrest people who use or provide medical marijuana in strict compliance with state laws. This is better than the draconian Bush League code that enforced federal laws regardless of state's legislation. Great. But what would really make a difference in people's daily lives, especially in rural communities, is the legalization of commercial hemp production.
Coffee Creek Correctional Facility isn't for the faint of heart, and it's definitely not for the inmate experiencing heart failure. In 2007, Catherine Anderson experienced a deadly heart valve infection and consequent liver and kidney failure. She begged for help, but doctors and nurses repeatedly refused to diagnose the obvious signs of congestive heart failure. Instead, they chalked Anderson's symptoms up to anxiety, the flu, heartburn, or menopause. Anderson has launched a federal civil rights lawsuit accusing medical staffers at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility of malpractice and violating her constitutional right to essential medical care. And her situation isn't unusual or extreme, it's the norm in American prisons.
Well, the Stryker Brigade is due back on Cascadian shores, and my next guest, independent investigative reporter Drew Hendricks, joins us with an update. Good morning, Drew.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being with us this morning. Can you give listeners an idea of where the Stryker Brigade is at the moment and when it is likely to hove into view over our horizons?
Well, unfortunately, fortunately from our point of view, but unfortunately for them, they are delayed. We have a little bit more time to prepare. Right now, they are on the 40th parallel in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, about halfway between here and Japan, making course corrections to try to avoid a very large storm, which is inbound to our location over the next couple of days. So I'm expecting them to arrive no sooner than Friday. They were originally scheduled to arrive tomorrow.
What sort of plans are in progress for greeting the Stryker Brigade?
Well, there's a port militarization resistance in Tacoma is holding an anti-war protest beginning Wednesday, October 21st at 5 p.m. That starts at Wapato Park, which is on South 72nd between Alaska and Sheridan Streets in Tacoma. And that will be a rally and then a march toward the Tacoma Mall to let people know that this is occurring in their community and give them some chances to find out what others have done in other communities about illegal military equipment moving over their public roads and over their public ports.
Given that the public has pretty much forgotten Iraq and is a little bit skeptical about our presence in Afghanistan, what sort of support have you seen locally?
In Olympia, we've seen a great deal of support. In Tacoma, we've seen mixed support. Tacoma is a very large working-class town immediately adjacent to one of the largest military bases on the West Coast. Fort Lewis houses, I forget how many tens of thousands of soldiers. They have two Stryker brigades, which are based at Fort Lewis, which have both deployed to Iraq, and then another Stryker brigade based at Fort Lewis, which has deployed to Afghanistan. So there probably are some people there, young people mostly, who feel that they understand what the war is about from inside the Army's perspective. And right now they're out on the ground learning what reality thinks about the occupation of Afghanistan. And some of them are coming home singly, unfortunately, packaged because they've, you know, we've had a few soldiers killed in Afghanistan, and they're starting to learn, you know, what Afghanistan is really about. They're
the graveyard of empires is what it's been traditionally called. Thank you so much for that. That's all the time we have for now, but we'll get an update from you as the Stryker Brigade draws nearer and plans progress. My guest has been Drew Hendricks, investigative reporter. Thank you so much for that, Drew.
Thank you.
America's long, weird war on terror continues to reverberate throughout Cascadia. Usama Kassir is the star of the show. 10 years ago, plans were hatching for an al-Qaeda training camp in Oregon. Kassir was convicted of plotting to help recruit for al-Qaeda, and his story is a feast for the fear machine set in motion by the Bush administration, despite the fact that the plans never came to fruition. According to the trial record, Usama Kassir expected to be welcomed by Muslim recruits eager to learn the ways of war. Instead, he got an Islamic leader from Seattle, a mentally impaired 18-year-old, and two women more interested in canning jars than jihad. Was he mad? He was enraged after arriving at the remote Dog Cry Ranch near Bly. Kassir is currently serving life in prison.
He's mad as hell, and he's not going to take it anymore.
This has been Air Cascadia for Monday, October 19th, 2009. Engineering is Tammy Dean. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBU AM News and Public Affairs Director. Chris Andre is the producer. I'm Liam Delta.
You're listening to All Natural, Free Range, Non-Syndicated, KBOO Radio. 90.7 FM in Portland, KBOO.FM on the web. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members, and welcome new members.
Dean Fox to Kendra Kimberoskis, co-president of Friends of Family Farmers, about how her organization is working to protect family farms and sustainable agriculture in Oregon.
Thanks for listening and have a good day.